Radio Free Palmer, 89.5 KVRF, presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and it's good to be back. I was away for about 3 weeks up at UConn Quest champion Hugh Neff's place, up there visiting him and his dogs. And today on our show, we have a special guest. He is a photographer and soon-to-be author of the book Born to Run, Athletes of the Iditarod. His name is Albert Lewis. Albert, how's it going?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Robert.
Thanks for joining us this evening. Where are you calling in from?
Anchorage.
You know, anybody that knows anything about mushing knows it's all about the dogs, and I know that you're coming out with a pretty cool book. I've been following you on Facebook for quite a while now, at least since I started seeing some of your photos. Great work, by the way. I'm looking forward to the book. But, you know, we were talking off air, and you said you're a convert for sure in this sport. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what you're all about.
Sure. I'm a recent transplant to Alaska about three and a half years ago. Moved up here from Lake Tahoe, California. Lived in California almost all my life, southern and northern. And extreme dog lover of all types. Knew about the Iditarod, just didn't know very much. Pretty much considered it probably a no-no, not a good thing. Needed to find out more, but I was naive. And then when I did get transplanted up here, my eyes have never been as open as they are now. I went to the start in Anchorage in March, and I was blown away, had goosebumps for about 5 hours straight as I watched the start, and told myself I need to get more involved with this, I need to learn more, and I just couldn't believe what I was seeing of these dogs and how happy they were and how excited they were and how compassionate the people, the fans, the mushers were for the sport.
Cool. And are you a photographer by trade, or what do you do for a living?
Yes, that's how I make my living. My background is in fashion photography, shooting catalogs, advertisements, brochures, whatnot. I graduated from college as a graphic designer, art director, then creative director, and then switched that over to photography. And I've been doing that for 22 years.
So here in the off season, you're traveling around to the all of the dog yards, dog kennels, all of the mushers' homes here in Alaska, and you're taking some pretty remarkable photos. One of the things that you guys can definitely check out. I'm sure you may have other links for us, but Facebook.com Born to Run Athletes of the Iditarod is the Facebook fan page. What got you interested in taking the photos for this book? You know, how did that whole project come about? You know, you said you were at the start, and you know, everybody has just this, you know, this undying attention that is captured and harnessed with those dogs that are running by. Mm-hmm. But what got you going on the book idea?
Mm-hmm. Well, what I started doing as soon as I saw the start, I said I want to learn more about the race. I want to know the rules. I want to know what they really do. I want to see how this sport is run. I'm an athlete myself. Not that type of an athlete, but other things, team sports, whatnot. And so I started investigating it. I saw other books that are out there, other ways that these dogs are promoted and whatnot. And I wasn't seeing anything that fit the niche of what my background is or how I shoot. I shoot with a real clean palette. I try to put the focus on the subject itself, not the environment that it lives within or participates within, but it's the subject by themselves. And therefore, the clean backdrops, the real attention to detail and the focus on the face of the subject, this being the dogs. And it just fit my photography really well. And I said, I don't see this out there. Perhaps it's out there. Perhaps it was done quite a bit in the past. But I said, I would like to bring a freshness to this and give something back to the people that they probably haven't seen recently.
I think it is a great idea, very cool way to showcase these athletes, and I'm sure in your travels so far that most of the mushers will say it is all about the dogs, and you can go ahead and photograph my dogs as much as you possibly want, because this sport is about the dogs. You know, the musher, he's pretty much the weak link. He's the guy standing behind the sled barking out orders, but the dogs are the ones that are capturing the attention. What do you think?
my gosh. I mean, it is all the dogs. They need the humans need them, but boy, they're just something so, so special. Every dog that I photograph, I just look right into his eyes. I've been fortunate to really capture their personalities, and they're really engaging with me, even though some won't look at the camera. I'm patient, and I wait for it. And I've been really lucky to be able to capture their personalities in a lot of ways. I mean, some mushers have said, this dog's usually more serious. You're getting him to be really relaxed, which is nice. But there's just true, pure beauty in each one of these dogs. I could shoot forever. I could shoot every dog in the kennel, but time permits.
Exactly. And I definitely want to talk about some of your visits and what kind of goes on behind the scenes in terms of producing this book. My first question in regards to that, are you planning to visit some of the kennels outside of Alaska, or is it just going to be the guys up here?
It's funny you say that. I would love to travel the world, and I recently received an invitation from Norway to come visit.
Wow.
Everything is supplied to me except for the airfare, so I'm working on that right now. But there are people on the Facebook page that are all around the world, especially Canada, because it's our neighbor, asking to come down there. And I hope to be able to dip into Canada once or twice. I need to wrap the shooting up for this book in order to have it out fairly soon, shortly. So how far I can go and the timing of that, I don't know. Maybe it's a sequel to the book. But, I mean, there's plenty of people in Alaska to fulfill the needs for the book. And I do want it to be fair that there's people all over the world that mush, but given my, you know, financial restraints and timing restraints, I got to do what I can do within the time limit. So hopefully Canada, maybe Norway, but we'll see.
So let's talk about those first few visits. I really want to talk about, some of the big-name guys that everybody knows, the Lance Mackeys and the Deedes and the Martins and those guys. Mm-hmm. But first off, who was the first visit? You know, you said you got you caught the spark, so to speak, there at the start. Who was that first visit for the photo shoot?
The first visit was Kelly Griffin.
Okay.
And I think it was in late March, maybe early April. Still a lot of breakup going on, a lot of water on the ground. I was nervous. I wanted to make sure that my little portable studio set worked out just right. She didn't know what to expect. She hadn't seen anything I produced other than the comps that I manufactured, saying this is what I hope it to look like. But it went really well. I think we photographed 12 of her dogs. I laid my studio down, believe it or not, over a mud puddle on water with a board underneath it. It was the only place at the time that we could find to set this up. And I've been learning as I go of what's the best scenario for me. Today I photographed in a greenhouse with a moose behind me. So I've been coming across a lot of different scenarios, but she was the first one. I put it together, sticks and pieces, but we made it work. It was beautiful. One of the first shots I did, it was one of my favorites still. A dog of hers named Ray came out really beautiful.
Very cool. And I definitely want to get a fan's perspective. I know we talked about this a little bit off air, about what it's like to pull up into a dog yard with 50, 60, 70, 100 dogs in it. You know, because a lot of people that follow mushing, they follow it from, just like we do all sports, that very novice expectation of what to expect. And they don't quite understand what it's like, that breadth of having 100 dogs barking all at once and carrying on and that sort of thing. But before we do, I have to ask you about one particular musher that you visited, and I think it was just a couple of days ago, Mary Shields. How did that go for you?
That was wonderful. She is so lovely. I could have stayed there all day and just listened to that woman speak. Such a gentle demeanor. Almost every word out of her mouth was a lead into some amazing story of her history, her legacy, the race itself. It was just really beautiful. I was trying to be as quiet as I possibly could. I'm usually a talker, and I didn't want to leave there. She had juice and brownies for me as we left, and we told stories to each other, and she was wishing me the best. But what a sweet, sincere, gentle soul. She's wonderful.
She is a great lady. I had the pleasure of having her speak at an event that I got to take part in. And, man, what, like you said, what story she has from way back in the day. So let's talk about that, pulling into those yards there. Like you said, you're from California. You're a transplant to Alaska, and I'm sure you have a pet dog or two. But what's it like pulling up there to a musher's cabin? It's not like most people expect, is it?
No, not at all. I was in shock the first time. I didn't know how they kept the dogs. I saw it in a few books and whatnot, but I didn't want to believe it until I got there. Of like, are there really 60 dogs outside all with dog houses? And it was just incredible. I got chills. I couldn't wait to go greet the dogs. And it was Kelly Griffin's place again. And I didn't know how to act around the dogs. I know a dog as come up and pet it, hug it, take it into the house, sit on the couch with it, et cetera, like a pet. And to learn that these dogs are working and they have a job to do and they do this and they do that. And it was just really, really, I was awestruck at looking at all these dogs and then noticing how happy they were, how they laid down on the top of their houses, how they did their circles when they saw a human doing something, or when a dog was chosen to come into the photo set, the other ones would all get excited. Then they would lay back down, then they'd get excited again. I have a smile on my face all the time when I'm around these dogs. It's incredible.
And how long are you at each place?
Well, that varies. Sometimes I get in a conversation, like with Didi Genro. It was wonderful. She sat me down after our shoot. We sat and chatted for an hour and a half, and she taught me, or just spoke to me all about the race and the history and the rules and all these little questions I had as a naive layperson. And I think that shoot maybe lasted 4 hours, but others, I'm out of there in an hour and a half. We rotate the dogs in one after another. The shoot takes anywhere from 30 seconds if the dog is responding to the camera well to 3-4 minutes per dog.
And I assume when you're up Mary Shields way, you visited Lance Mackey and his kennel. One of his most famous dogs is Zorro. You captured a picture of. Tell us a little bit about Zorro, and if you can, Albert, lead into what you're talking about off the air, that fashion sense that you're trying to capture with these dogs. You know, like you said, you're a photographer of a different trade, not of pets and that sort of thing. So what are you trying to capture with these guys? And let's talk about Zorro in particular.
Right. Well, it was interesting. Lance, he presented a few other dogs to me. I think dogs that are currently running on his teams now, or maybe some up-and-comers. I'm not completely familiar with all the names and who's running who or plans to run who in the next year. But I had been told by other people and through the Facebook fans saying, please make sure you get Lippy and Larry and Zorro. And so I'm writing these names down thinking, boy, I have to ask that I get them. And we're finishing up. We're getting close. Lance needed to move on. And I said, well, don't forget, I'd really love to get Larry, Lippy, and Zorro. And he brings over Larry, and he brings over Lippy. And then I said, and wasn't there a Zorro? And there's this dog wandering the yard. He said, well, Zorro's done now, getting a little round. He's shedding right now. But sure, if you want to photograph him, that's great. And then as he brought him up, he was telling me all the history of this dog. And I just looked at this dog, and I felt like I could see the miles in the dog's eyes. It was wonderful. I just said, wow, this dog has history, and I can see it. And what I did for Zorro is I just went in real close in my photography. I featured his face and his character, and the heart and the soul coming out of the eyes is what I was hoping to capture. Some of these dogs are just Michael Jordan athlete-looking dogs, but Zorro was just like, look into my eyes, and you'll see everything about me. And that's what I was trying to capture with him.
And I think you did. And it appears, I'm looking at your Facebook page right now, it appears you're giving everybody a little bit of a sneak peek of all the photos. How are you going to pick and choose? I know when, you know, I've seen the documentaries on how these types of things are made, you know, the swimsuit issue and that sort of thing. I'm sure you have thousands of photos. How are you going to whittle this down into a manageable level?
Right. Well, I'm at 270 dogs now, and I still have a trip down to Seward and Kasilof for about 5 more kennels. So I'll be up in over 300 when I'm done. I'm planning a 200-page book that will include approximately 100 dogs. It's a very clean layout where there's a dog photo on one page, and then the other page is very blank, has the dog's name and a couple quick statistics about it. So we're looking at 100, 110 dogs only. I'm going to be doing it by the imagery. I'm not going to look into the history of the dog. I'm not taking any bribes or favors. I'm going to look at it for the visual impact that the image gives me. A lot of that comes back on me. How did I shoot it? Was it a successful shoot? I have some dogs that have one ear up, one ear down, and a tongue hanging out the mouth. To me, that's really beautiful. It makes me chuckle. Other dogs are just strong and stern and muscular, and that's beautiful. So I'm going to be picking and choosing that way. I hope that I make some choices from all the kennels. I would sure hate to leave anyone out. So So there'll be a little bit of that behind all this, but I don't want to play favorites with anyone.
Right, right. Has there been a lot of people have their favorites in terms of styles of dogs, whether it be the big dogs or the little dogs or the Siberian Huskies or the Alaskan Huskies, and you know each team picks a particular looking dog. Has there been a favorite for you so far in that overall look of the sled dog?
Well, being a little bit naive in the sport, I am noticing the different sizes and possibly the different uses that these dogs have. I've sure seen the gamut. I mean, I've seen leaders that look like they weigh 18 pounds, which is probably 35, but they're just so little, and I just want to cuddle with them. And then I've seen these big, strong dogs that are above my hip, you know, part Great Dane looking to me or whatnot, and I'm thinking, this thing could pull a house down. So I don't know. I think it's the dogs that look me in the eye and that give me a little bit of their soul that look back at me have been my favorites. There's been some that are just stunningly beautiful to look at as though they were show dogs. My background, I do have an obedience training and a confirmation training background. So, again, it's the visuals. It's things that catch my eye.
Right, right. So we talked off air about looking clean, being a very clean format. You know, and very popular photography, especially today, is that black and white format. Why is that so popular today in photography?
Well, what that does, it's been popular since it came out because it was the first medium of photography. It eliminates all distractions. If it's a black and white scenario of a city block with a person eating a loaf of bread on a step, all the noise goes away, and your eyes can focus on the subject that you want to focus on, because everything is of the same color tone. If there is a pink balloon flying up behind something, your eye is going to go over to that pink. Well, in a black and white photo, there is no pink.
Right.
So it draws your eye in to the point of the impact that you want to see, and you might be looking at the muscles of the dog, someone else might be looking at its eyes, people have noticed the weight on the dogs, but it allows you, it equals everything out, so everything becomes the same and lets your eye pick what it wants to look at. It's stunning that way.
We're talking to Albert Lewis. He's going to be producing and publishing a book called Born to Run, Athletes of the Iditarod. He hopes to have it out, if not by the holidays, definitely by the start of the 2013 Iditarod. Now that you are we call it addicted or hooked, or you've caught the bug, so to speak, are you planning to come up again and possibly follow it further through in coming years? I know you do live in Anchorage, but are you addicted enough to one day show up in Nome?
Oh, absolutely. And I will be very disappointed in myself if I'm not somewhere on the trail or Nome this race season. If I have to sit in front of my computer at 4 a.m. and watch those GPS dots, I'm probably going to pull my hair out. It was just so fascinating. I was up. I was hoping I was up before the mushers were so I could watch their dot move across the screen. I don't know how I'm going to be involved, whether it's just a handler volunteer, whether it's in photography. I know there's a lot of photographers out there that do a great job. I'll serve food. I don't know what. But I want to give back. That's another part of this book is, you know, if I can turn the positive dollar on this book, I've already committed that a portion of the proceeds are going to go back to the animal care and the veterinary care committees, helping people that help the dogs. And I want to give a portion of that back. So in the same way, I want to devote my time to helping the race be successful again.
I definitely want to talk about some puppies here in just a second. But before we came on air, you were talking about a different perception that you have of the race now. You know, a lot of people have positive and negatives about the Iditarod in particular. What have you learned about the race itself that maybe have changed your mind a little bit other than what you thought about going in?
Yeah. I think it's an overall blindness that, well, if your dog, little Sparky, who might be a Lhasa Apso, sits on your lap and rides in the car, therefore all dogs should do that. And I think it's that. I've had Labs, I've had Dalmatians, I have a Puggle now, and that's what they do, so therefore all dogs should do that. Not understanding completely, not being close enough to all dogs. St. Bernard's pull, Alaskan Huskies, you know, run, pull, whatever. not understanding that there's a purpose for them and they've been bred for that. And just seeing them at the start of like, can we get going already? I really want to run. They weren't saying, I really want to climb into the warm cab of your truck and take a nap. So, which my little dog would do right now. He's bred more for that. So right. It's just the understanding that there are purposes for these dogs. The dogs have chosen through our breeding of them, but they would much rather do anything but that. And I see that visiting these kennels. They can't stand being tied on that lead and just standing still, and they're trying to pull to get away, and not to get away because we're harming them, to get away to do what they do.
Right. You know, the summertime is laying around and getting fat for most sled dogs.
Yeah.
It's relaxing time, but they need that too. So many of these guys have been on their feet literally for thousands of miles. And I always tell people about how long that Iditarod race is. It's pretty much from Denver, Colorado to Minneapolis, Minnesota. That's a heck of a long way for 4 feet.
Right. Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's a really nice segue to something about the book, too, is I'm looking to have the foreword of the book written by an ultra-marathon runner. His name is Dean Parsons. He's probably the most famous marathon runner, ultra-marathon runner. I used to be the creative director at the North Face, the clothing company, and he is a North Face athlete. I used to photograph him on some of his runs. He's agreed to do this, and the reason I picked him is part of what I've been learning on this race of how do these dogs run 1,000 miles? I would never run 1,000 miles. I would stop. Why do they do this? How do they do this? How do they want to do this? And I feel that Dean could be someone on the human side of things that could help explain that to us lay people, us people in the mushing community, of, well, this is what a human might think of that. And this is what they go through. This is what they think of it. Jeff King had a really great statement. He thinks that's a wonderful idea, yet he said, I'll bet the one thing that Dean writes for your book is they love to run.
Mm-hmm.
They just love to run. I'm hoping to get, you know, more philosophical, more about nutrition, more about the drive in their heart, et cetera, just so that us humans can understand what the dogs are doing to themselves.
So we have about 7-8 minutes left or so. Albert, talking to Albert Lewis, is going to be producing a book called Born to Run, Athletes of the Iditarod. Everybody loves puppies, and you've photographed several sets of puppies. I know, I'm just looking at your page here, you captured a group of puppies with Lance, and I know that you got a group of them with Hugh Neff. What is that spark? Is it just the same idea that, you know, the puppy that we get on Christmas morning as it is with a new batch of Alaskans at these yards? Tell us about the puppies you've seen.
They're just full of creatures. The first thing that I was surprised by is these mushers treat them like they're another part of the team. They don't necessarily coddle them or treat them puppy-like. They're not putting them on a chain or have a house just yet, but they're taught to be a part of the team right away. And I thought, at first I thought, wow, that seems a little harsh. Again, that's not what I would do to my puppy pug. Yet, these dogs have a future, and they need to start learning their future as soon as they can. They're just so innocent that you can already see that they know why they're here. They're around the big dogs, they're mingling in and out of them, and they're trying to mimic them and mock them already. It was fascinating, and boy, are there a lot of puppies out there right now.
There are, and you know, probably the puppy master in this sport is Martin Bucer. Have you had a chance to head up his way yet?
Yeah, I did. I photographed several of his dogs and Roan's dogs. But we didn't get any puppies. I don't know if they hadn't delivered yet or he was keeping them somewhere else, but I didn't see them in his lot at the time I was up there. Lance had some, as you said. Brent Sass had some. Hugh Neff had some that were really cute. So maybe a couple others. I haven't photographed all the puppies. I do want to put a couple of the puppies in the book as future Iditarod stars, which I'm sure they will be. So capture all the generations.
Well, I know you had that photograph of Karen Hendrickson and hers, and it said future champ or something like that. That's a remarkable shot there. That looks like a fashion photography shot for sure.
Right, right. Yeah, I love that too. Yeah, they're so sweet. I mean, they're beautiful. I'm just trying to capture that. I'm not, I mean, I do have my photo tricks and whatnot, but I'm letting seeing their beauty come out, and I'm lucky enough to be in front of the camera and capturing it.
So my last question for you, then we can follow up on anything you want to mention. Have you been on a sled yet? Have you had that chance yet?
No, I haven't. That's funny as you say that, because I'm dying to do that. A little nervous, a little scared, but in a positive way. And I was telling Martin Booster, I said, boy, I sure want to get into this sport, and I don't see myself as becoming a musher. The involvement, the commitment, I live in Anchorage, that's probably not going to happen here. But somehow I want to be involved. And he said, have you been on a sled yet? And I said, no. And he said, well, then don't. because you might want to mush.
That's how we all get started. We get on that first sled ride. The first two dogs become 4, 6, 8, 12, 24, et cetera. They multiply in double, just like anything else. So pretty soon you'll have 20 or 30 dogs in your little lot in the backyard there. Albert Lewis. Born to Run, book coming out. Anything else you want to say in closing? We have about a minute or two.
I guess what I would say is I'm just really happy to do this project. I hope it helps the community. I hope it sheds more positive light on these dogs and the sport itself. I caught wind of some negative light that's out there, and I was just appalled. And so I want to do everything I can within my skill sets and abilities and time to kind of change that perception and get everyone, I know I'm not going to convert everyone, but those people are wrong and they have the wrong idea of what's happening here. And I'm trying to show that these dogs are beautiful. They're wonderful. They can become a house dog when they retire. They're happy doing what they're doing. And I'm hoping that this book can shed that. I'm hoping that I can get it out there in other ways. I want to do gallery showings. I want people to say, those are beautiful photos of dogs. Oh, wow, those are Iditarod dogs. I would not have thought that.
Right, right. I think you're doing great work. I'm sure you've been told that 1,000 times. But,
you
know, like you said, this sport needs that. We have a heck of a lot of good publicity out there, especially during the months of February and March when Yukon Quest and Iditarod's going on. That's when we get our national press. We even get a mention on ESPN here and there during that time. But otherwise, a lot of folks don't know what happens the rest of the year. They think that we just take a group of dogs out for a week or two, and that's it. The rest of the time, they're just the prototypical dog in the backyard, and that's not the case, is it?
Right. No, not at all. I mean, these people were working hard. As I was showing up here we are in June, and I'm still shooting, and they're still working with their dogs. They're running their dogs. The care that they have to give them, and that's another thing I was so amazed by pulling into the different kennels, is the cleanliness of these places. Yes, it's a dog lot. I understand that. So there is dirt, and there's other things there, but they're very clean. The attention to detail around the dogs is amazing that these mushers put on. The regimented schedules that they keep, and they're excusing me because they have to go talk to a dog about doing something or, administer a medicine or something like that. It's just amazing that the dog is priority number one above all for these mushers.
And for most of them, it's a full-time job, 365, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, it sure was. Yeah, I mean, some people have their daily jobs, but they have handlers there taking care of them during the day, and you can tell that those mushers would rather be in the dog lot with the dogs all the time.
So, Albert, besides Facebook, do you have anything else? Do you have a website up, anything like that?
I don't yet. I'm going to launch a website for the book just before the book comes out, and that way I'll be able to handle sales and orders that way. Interviews through there and be able to post things on the book that way and get comments from there. But Facebook is kind of running our world right now, so I just jumped on that bandwagon, and it's working pretty well.
And
that's enough to manage as it is.
You can find that. Just search Born to Run in the search bar of Facebook, and it'll pull it right up. Just make sure you like that page. That way you'll get your updates on the news line and all that good stuff. So, yeah, this is a social media world, and Facebook is the one. Albert, yeah. It's been a pleasure. I'm so glad we were able to talk. I know we talked several times back and forth when I was up in Tok, and I'm glad to have you on the show for our homecoming, I guess, after about a month off air.
Right. Excellent. Thank you so much, Robert. I appreciate it.
No problem. I'll make sure I send over some links and things to you by email as soon as we get them posted, okay?
Great. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. That was Albert Lewis, the author of Born to Run, Athletes of that Iditarod. It's going to be coming out sometime either towards the holiday season or for sure by the time of the next Iditarod. It was a pleasure talking to him. We're about out of time, folks. Next week, we hope to have on Iditarod musher Ramey Smith on Mushing Radio. We'll talk to you guys next time. Goodbye.